Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. Dr. Jose Trevino from Virginia Commonwealth University spoke about the past, present, and future of the pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma paradigm. He discussed the role that surgical oncologists can play in disease management alongside their colleagues, notable socioeconomic disparities in treatment access and outcomes, and translational research dedicated to areas like the tumor microenvironment. So what do current surgical strategies look like in the effective treatment of patients with pancreatic cancer, and how can oncology surgeons best collaborate with medical oncologists and other team members to optimize outcomes?
I think it's incredibly important that when a patient gets treatment, for example, in pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma, which is the area that I focused my entire career on from a clinical to a research and all the way around, you need to have a multidisciplinary team, people that work very well together. And without that, it becomes incredibly difficult to treat this particular disease process, whether it's an early stage or a later stage. And so surgeons and medical oncologists and radiation oncologists and oncologists from all areas have to work together as a group. The idea of this silo mentality where you're doing your thing and then subsequently you're sending the patient to another person, that's a difficult place for a patient with cancer to be, especially a cancer like this. I think I see the future as a multidisciplinary team, not only being clinically involved, but also very research involved, where let's just say, for example, you get a personalized approach. And so it's incredibly important for that. I can't stress enough the idea of team science when it comes to this particular disease. But the surgeon is very limited in this particular area. And most of my surgeon colleagues will hate the fact that I say this, but we are limited in our surgical approach. In other words, there's only so much we can cut out of a person and allow them to potentially live a good quality of life. The operations we do have not changed much in the past 20, 30 years. And to be honest, the operation, which has been in existence for over 100 years for the bigger tumors of the head of the pancreas, it was first described in the 1800s, to be honest. And a lot of people didn't survive those operations because there was a lot of things we didn't fully understand. But nowadays, you know, the survivability is really good in the right patient setting. But surgery in and of itself, like I said earlier, you can only take so much. And I would caution the surgical approaches by also thinking oncologically, because I say this a lot, just because we can doesn't mean we should. So if certain cancers have already left the area of what you're going to resect, there is no point to a surgical approach, because at that moment, the treatment is systemic until you get control of the disease. So our surgical approaches, like I said, over and over and over again, to some degree, when you remove the primary tumors, have been limited to two or three main operations, one being the resection of the head of the pancreas, which is otherwise known as a pancreatic duodenectomy, the other one being potentially the body and the tail of the pancreas, which is otherwise known as a distal pancreatectomy. And in some cases, for benign tumors of the pancreas, you can remove just the central part, which is called a central pancreatectomy. And those are for the non-invasive tumors per se, or the pre-malignant tumors that can occur. But again, you know, from a surgical perspective, not much has changed. Now, are there potential advances where people are resecting veins and arteries and things like that? You know, I think there is some promise in that as long as the oncologic principles are followed. And what I mean by that is if you're going to be doing a major operation with removal of artery or vein that are critical to life and trying to replace those arteries and veins, that at least you hope that you get all the cancer out. Because recurrence can happen. And when it happens after a major operation like that, it can be devastating. And so to the patient who feels that they're going to be cured when in reality they might not. And so surgery is limited by itself. Surgery with our medical oncologists, our radiation oncologists, and hopefully one day with our translational scientists is going to be the key to a longer quality of life.
I see. Thank you for providing that thorough breakdown of everything. But looking ahead, what kinds of health disparities may patients with pancreatic cancer experience? How can the field effectively mitigate these disparities to ensure more equitable outcomes?
When you talk about health disparities, a lot of people think about race and ethnicity. And I'd venture to say, yes, there is a component to that. But there's also a lot of other disparities as well. Like we're talking social disparities, or we're talking about people that don't have access to care. And that could be anywhere in the rural areas of this country. I mean, if you look at West Virginia, to be honest, I mean, that is an incredibly rural state to some degree outside of its major cities. And a lot of patients don't have full access to the great components of West Virginia, like WVU, West Virginia University, and other areas. It's disheartening because the disparities exist even there. And that does not put into consideration, nor does it care about race and ethnicity. At the end of the day, pancreatic cancer doesn't care whether you're Black, white, Asian, Latino. It doesn't matter. What it does is it tries to kill. And so disparities are important. We need to recognize them. Access to care is huge. The social drivers of health are huge. Our patients being allowed the opportunity to get to these major comprehensive centers that will treat them best with the multidisciplinary team, that's a disparity. Do they have a full kind of access to education on things they shouldn't be doing, i.e. smoking tobacco or drinking? I had a patient come to my clinic the other day and say that their oncologist told them it was okay to smoke during their chemotherapy. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So it's education and education. These things are also disparities in certain patient populations. And when you look at the biology, there are certain aspects of the biologic behavior of pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma that are clear. We know that patients who are Black, who are African-American, Afro-Caribbean, have a tendency to have a worse outcome with pancreatic ductal adenocarcinomas compared to whites. And there's a paradox to some degree because Latinos seem to do better than anybody. Now explain that, whether a Latina goes to a major academic center or goes to a community center where there isn't maybe that multidisciplinary, they still do better. Why? Right. So there is some biology to be said about this. So key things to consider, and going back to maybe what I said earlier about ancestry, ancestry is important. So the disparities exist. There are racial and ethnic disparities where Blacks do have worse outcomes. And there are also other socioeconomic disparities as well that I think we need to overcome to provide equitable outcomes. And that's the goal for us, is to be able to, number one, understand that. Now, not to complicate things further, but there might be, again, as I said earlier, something real about who we are as a person and maybe even as a race and an ethnic group. For example, if you really dig deep into our genetic background and our ancestry, where we come from, there might be clues. I tell people that we do research on everyone in terms of looking at certain things that might help us understand the disease better. And that's what I mean by research. But can you imagine if one day we realize that there's a particular gene that's upregulated in a certain racial ethnic group that might give us clues to how we might be able to combat the disease for everyone? And that's the goal, right? That is the absolute goal. So while there might be some controversy in terms of looking at cancer as a health disparity in certain areas and the idea of diversification of our samples and really looking at the uniqueness of who we are as a population, I think that's a power. And so I truly believe in researching cancer health disparities because of the simple fact that at the end of the day, we might find really key things to help us combat this horrible disease.
I see. And how might research focused on pancreatic tumor biology, tumor microenvironment, and similar factors advance the treatment and research of patients with pancreatic cancer?
Some of the best grants I've ever read that have been fully funded by the National Institute of Health and the National Cancer Institute have been the ones that have looked at cancer as what it is. It's complex. It's heterogeneous. It's incredibly manipulative, like I mentioned before, especially pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma. And when you look at the tumor microenvironment, to some degree, we're looking at how the environment is affecting the system as a whole. So immunotherapies don't work for pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma, while it works for other cancers. And the reason for that is I believe that the pancreatic tumor environment or microenvironment really affects the ability of the body to fight off the cancer. And remember that immunotherapies are primarily used to ramp up your immune system to kill cancer. But in that environment for which cancer lives, it has a way to stop that, to turn off the immune system. And so it's key. Like I said, some of the best grants I've ever read have really focused in on not only the immune system, but also the stromal components or the adjacent, quote unquote, normal tissues for which cancer lives. Because I think it all integrates kind of into one big complex system. And so people who have studied pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma on a more simplified manner, just looking at just the cancer itself, I feel don't fully understand how cancer affects the entire system, the entire human system. And so while the tumor microenvironment is important in the pancreas, remember that cancer is producing a whole host of things, what I call an inflammatory milieu, or, you know, this humor that is going throughout the entire body that is causing a dysfunction of your muscle, a dysfunction of your heart, a dysfunction of all parts of your human system. And in some degree, I would venture to say that future research is going to show that cancer, especially pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma, will affect the function of the brain. And so it's what it does. And remember, its goal is to overcome a person and kill them. And it does it by so many different ways. And therefore, the understanding of the human system and the tumor microenvironment and how it does that in a cancer patient is incredibly impactful, incredibly important. And so, yes, I tell people all the time, we're not treating the cancer, we're treating the patient. And remember that the cancer is what we want to kill, but we got to remember that we're treating the patient. And I think that brings kind of a level of understanding that it's a systemic problem. It's the whole body that's being affected by this cancer. And we have to put into consideration what the cancer is doing to the system and what the system is trying to do to the cancer.
More good points there. Thank you very much. If you had to wrap everything up, what should others take away from this conversation and the current state of the pancreatic cancer field overall?
I think at this point, pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma by the year 2030 will be the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths in this country, in the U.S. When I first started doing this research in 2003, and when I first decided that I was going to focus my career around pancreatic cancer and pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma alone, like when I decided in 2003, it was number 5. In other words, it was the 5th leading cause of cancer-related deaths. And while we have done amazing things in other cancers, like we're talking breast, melanoma, prostate, lung, we've done some really great things, colorectal, but screening programs that we have just been tremendous. Pancreatic cancer will be the number 2 leading cause of cancer-related deaths by the year 2030, and that's not too far away. What does that say? It says that this disease has done its due diligence to control a lot of patients within this country, has devastated many people and families alike. Therefore, if I was going to say anything, I would say there has to be a ton of education to our patients and also our physicians who see patients on a primary level to know what those red flags are when a patient comes to their clinic. Because early detection of early lesions that could eventually turn to pancreatic adenocarcinoma is going to be the key to survival. Ultimately, catch it before it becomes a cancer, we solve a huge problem. So genetic mutations, smoking, changes to the pancreas that can have endocrine or exocrine dysfunction, all these things are incredibly, incredibly important. And therefore, early detection of early lesions is key. The second thing is obviously early detection of early cancer. In other words, when the current cancer develops, to not ignore the symptoms that can somehow be ignored by not only our patients, but also even our own primary care physicians who don't see the changes that are happening that are consistent, and nothing against them, right? And nothing against people who really work with patients on a primary care level. I'm a pancreas guy, right? That's all I do. So this is all I see. This is all I breathe. I see. So I know when I see it. But education is incredibly important to save lives for early stage pancreatic cancer. And then ultimately, the last thing, support all the translational research that you can consider. Clinical trials are key. And I think at the end of the day, when you think about clinical trials and how we're trying to do new therapies, whether the multiple targeted or chemotherapies to try to cure this disease, are important. And I think involvement from patients and physicians in clinical trials is incredibly important and going to be most impactful.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com,
the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.